You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about life's necessities, the bare necessities, really, and how we can determine our bare necessities, but better yet, how to understand what our desires are and how not to misconstrue desires and necessities. You know, one of our first obvious necessities to live is our life. In order to live, we have to have a life. We have to have a life. And I think that that translates to me as having more of a healthy lifestyle. You know, because when you're battling disease and you're battling something that overwhelms you and puts you in a state of turmoil when it comes to your body, it's a stressful situation. It can overwhelm you because that's the first and foremost building block to life is your life and your health. You know, the second thing would be what? Food and water. In order to live, we need to have water. In order to live, we need to have food. And these are so important. And when we think about it in this ease, we realize that, okay, I have to be alive. I need to be treating my body healthy. I need to be eating healthy. I need to be drinking water. I need to be taking care of that. And that's the building blocks, right? The next thought that comes to mind is shelter. Shelter is a big deal. To not know where you're going to sleep the next night is a stressful situation. Anytime one of these situations, either it's your life slash your health, your food, your water, or your shelter, anytime one of those things is off, you're off. Think about it. I've been in those health issues throughout my whole life where it's like all you could do is think about it, and you have to resist wallowing in it, and you have to try to overcome that. But better yet, you have to sit there and think, okay, I believe in myself. I know that this is going to work out. I want to embrace this. You know, I need to feel the love and support that I have. But at the same time, when you're battling a healthcare issue, it's hard to keep it all in perspective. The same goes if you're battling not being able to get food, if you're battling not having clean water, if you're battling not having a place to sleep at night. These factors are so important. And the thing is that a lot of times these factors are so real that if it's not worked out, that overcomes every bit of your life. I know that some people listening have had a lot to work with, and some other people have had to scrape and scratch for everything they got, and I understand that. And some of you might have been in a position when you were young where you didn't have a place to sleep. And I think this is a good example for people because I think that this has hit home for more people than it hasn't. At one time or another, you ran out of funds to have a place to live. And I have stories like this that are countless on a monthly basis where I talk to clients who went through a process of being homeless, you know, basically had to go out there and get another job, had to take care of themselves. I had some clients that have gone into a facility, you know, and then eventually get back on their feet. And I've had some clients that come in here and will tell me about when they were having to sleep on people's couches and do the couch surfing thing. And I think there's a lot of people out there that have been there that have done that. And some people right now that are doing it now. And you know what I'm talking about when I stress the fact that when you're doing this, it's hard to see the forest through the trees. When you're having to couch surf and you're needing to go to a different place the next day, and you know that, and it's a very interesting concept because it's even hard to sleep because you don't know where you're going to sleep the next night. And I know that there's some people out there that would say, well, you know what, I would get a really good night's sleep and pray that I could find something. But I think that most of the time it plagues people. And I've talked to clients where they've had the situation where they're going from couch to couch, hoping that someone's going to let them stay for a week. And they tell me, they're like, you know, the week thing is such a good deal because you have time to go out and find a job. You have time to go out there and apply for positions. You have time to make calls to employers, possible employers, and to take care of your business. But when you don't have that week, and you have day by day when it comes to sleeping on other people's couches, that's all you can focus on. Because you're over there trying to figure out what's the next place you're going to go. And instead of wanting to try to set up interviews and meet with employers and get your stuff dry clean or get it clean and trying to figure out how to get there and do all this stuff, instead of doing that, you need to know where you're going to sleep the next night. So as early as you wake up the next day, you get on the phone and you start making calls. You start making calls because you got to figure out where you're going to be sleeping that night. And so instead of looking for a job, instead of trying to figure out all this other stuff, you're over there trying to secure a spot for that night. And that can take time because you have to actually have people answer the phone or respond back to you. There's a lot of things that go on, and so you're at their beck and call and hoping that things work out. And I think that other people have dealt with this maybe on maybe not such an extreme, but I believe that we've all been there before where we're having to figure out life's basic four bare necessities. And I would have to strike that the whole idea of life and having a healthy health is paramount. Because when we don't have our health, all we can think about is how much longer are we going to live? What do we need to do about our health? Because that's the first and foremost responsibility. But then food and water, and then shelter. And I think the next component of our bare necessities is love. And we've all heard that music, all we need is love. And when I was asking a few people some questions before I walked into the studio tonight, I asked them, I said, what do you think is one of life's biggest necessities? And their response back was love. And I agree, to be loved and to love is paramount. Now, I don't know if we can say that that is above and beyond water, but I will have to say that it is in the top five. And it's interesting how that is, because love is so important, because without love, life is very lonely. Without love, the feeling part of life is missing. And I find it interesting because I feel that I wonder, actually, is it hard or harder to love when you're missing one of the four necessities? When you're missing a healthy body, when you're missing food or water or shelter, is it hard to put that into perspective? But better yet, it seems like the fight or flight situation would take place. The fight or flight response would probably be on the forefront. And I guess maybe we would look at love as a secondary. But even though I see love is so important, if I did not have food or water, I think food or water would be on the top of my list. And I stress these bare necessities tonight because I want us to discuss this, because I think a lot of times in life, we actually misplace what we believe to be bare necessities with desires and wants. And anytime I open up a magazine nowadays, you open up the magazine, and yeah, most of it is ads for sure. But most of it is ads for these really expensive watches, jewelry, clothing, insanely expensive trips, diamonds. And it's interesting because those are definitely not necessities, but a lot of times we see them as, because it's an offshoot of one of an emotion that we have, a feeling that we have, or something that we feel that we need. Like, for example, food and water. Food and water are bare necessities to life, right? They're bare necessities. You can't live without them. Okay. But let's look at the flip side of that. What would be a desire or a want off of food and water? Well, off of water might be wine. Off of water might be alcohol, liquor. Off of water could be caffeine, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, food. Off of food, you need food that can fuel your body. But do you need béarnaise sauce? Do you need steak and baked potatoes? Do you need high caloric rich foie gras to sustain your body to keep running? And I think that's an option, an example, and better yet, kind of from the mind's A to B, how sometimes when we're buying food, it's like we're not just buying it to fuel our body, we're buying it because it's opulent. When I was a kid, I remember my parents were raised at a certain time and generation where if you had steak and baked potato, you had money, you were doing well. Life was good. And it's funny how things have changed kind of full circle, because I feel good about eating like vegetable lasagna. You know, I went over to Snap Kitchen the other day and I got some vegetable lasagna, and I feel really, really good when I eat that. But I know there's a lot of people that still live by the concept of steak and potatoes means that you're doing well. But that's definitely not just food as the basic necessity, is it? That's taking it to the next level of desire and want and opulence. And I'm not trying to say, oh, just because you eat steak, you're being opulent. I'm just saying that's where we are right now. Like, if a watch was a bare necessity, you could buy a $5 watch because it's going to tell the time. But is a Rolex a bare necessity? I don't know. And see, that's the difference. And I think that a lot of these desires, and I'm going to talk about this later on in the hour, a lot of these desires and these wants and these things that we buy turn around and actually hold us down through our life. And I'm going to explain that later on. So when we return, we'll be talking more about life's basic necessities, more about our wants and how to figure it out. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in two shakes.
Up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about life's necessities, how to figure out what they are, why it matters, but better yet, what about our desires and those wants that we want, the things that we want so badly to have? What about those things, and how do those sometimes get confused with our basic necessities? You know, earlier in the first segment, we were talking about life and life's breath, and the big essential is our health. If you don't have your health, it's difficult to deal with the rest. I found in life that when people are struggling to have their health, everything else falls by the wayside, and I've been there before. I've been there before where I didn't know if I was going to live or die, and that is a very stressful situation. And it's not until you can kind of see past that and see the big picture or accept the inevitable can you see the other facets. The same is with water and food. If you have no water, you have no food. What are you looking for? You're looking for food or water or both. And that can take on the entire day. Because when we don't have something, with the absence of something that is of the basic necessity, we have to get it. We have to have it. We have to get it because it's a life or death situation. Shelter is a big deal. Shelter. But I think first and foremost is health. Second, water. And third is food. Next, we have shelter. And shelter is so important, so vital, because it's one of those things that it just makes life easier. When you have a place to sleep and you have a place to live and you have a place to have your house and to show up to at night to go to bed after work and all that, it's good. It's good. It's a good thing. And I see homeless people when I'm driving home from work that have their spot. And I respect some of these people where you see them where they are in the same spot day after day. They do their thing during the day and then they come back and they stay there. And it might be a bridge. Might be their shelter. But think about that. Think about the stress level of that. About sleeping. About protection. About wondering what's going to happen next. About wondering, can I sleep? What if it's 105 degrees outside? What if it's 20 degrees outside? And there's all these concepts and thoughts, because I've been in the situation where you are couch surfing, and I know a lot of people who have, and I've had a lot of clients who come into my office who at one time or another were sleeping at their friends' houses while they were trying to get a job, while they were trying to get back on their feet, and in the process they needed help. And I've asked some of those clients before, especially when they're in a current situation and I'm donating my time and treatment to them because I want to see them get to that next level. I'll ask them, I'll say, so how was the day? And they're like, well, the good thing is I knew I was coming to see you. The bad thing is that I had to try to figure out where I was going to stay tonight. And I finally got it taken care of, but it took a good part of two and a half hours. And I said, wow. I said, how was I like? And they said, well, you know, you wake up as early as possible. You get ready. And then, you know, you try to be as quiet as possible because you don't want to be rude to the people's house you're staying at. And you start making calls. You start texting. You start calling people and just see where you can stay that night. And some people will get back to you really quickly and other people won't. And they go, the worst thing is that when somebody tells you you can stay there and at the last minute, they change their mind. And so there you are scrambling around to try to figure out what to do. And I said, how does that work with getting a job? They go, it makes it really difficult. Makes it really difficult because I want to be able to get ready and interview for possible jobs. But at the same time, I want to make sure that I have a place to stay. And I get it. And that's one of the main necessities is when you have a place to live, it takes a lot of stress off you. It makes life a lot easier to know that I go home and my house is going to be there. You know, the next necessity that I think is an absolute necessity is love. And I think that really is in a tier under those specific necessities. And I know some people would argue with me, but I think that food, water, and life presupposes probably love. But I think that maybe love might come before shelter, but I don't know. But love is essential, and we don't have love in our life, you know it. A loveless life, to me, is a life maybe not worth living. And I think that having love in your life is so critically important, because to feel love and to give love and to receive love is part of the human condition. It's part of the universe. It's the universal creed. This is what we're supposed to do. This is why we were made. This is our whole building blocks. The creator created us in the vision of love, right? And that's what we're supposed to be doing. And love is so important because when we have love in our life and we love other people, what? It comes back. When we honestly love other people, we always get love back. Now, it might not come from that exact person, but you get it. And it comes to you from other forms and fashions. And I am just inquisitive by love and how much love we actually have within us to give. And it makes me feel really good. It makes me feel really good because I love to be loved and I love to love. And I don't ever think about people or their race or their age or anything when it comes to me loving them. And I just see people as just other humans. And I think that when we're able to finally love and understand what love is, there's nothing that can stand in the way of love. There's no fear. There's no anger. There's no resentment. It's just love. And when we honestly love, we're living our life and we're holding our life to a different standard. And we're saying that in order to live my life properly, I have to love everybody in my world. And I do. And there might even be some people you might not necessarily like everything they do. But that doesn't really hold you back from loving them, does it? I mean, some of us have family members that can be difficult, and some of us have raised children that can be very difficult to deal with. And some of them may have issues that you've been trying to help or deal with for the last 15 to 20 years, and you've thrown your hands in the air and you go, God, I just don't know what to do. And you still love them. You might not like everything they do. You might not agree with anything they do, but you love them. And I think that's what makes love the number five most important life necessity, is that we have to have love and we need to feel love and we need to love to be human, to be loved, to go to that next level, to understand a higher level of thinking, and to get the reason why we're here, because I think that's a lot of why we're here, is to understand how to love everybody, because when we love everybody, we also love ourselves. You know, the next life's necessity that I find is important, this is one that some people have a difficult time figuring out. This is one that people have a difficult time figuring out because they just don't know what it is. And I think a lot of times it can be that we overthink it because we're deep thinkers. We're very deep thinkers. We might, you know, think very deeply. and we have maybe a hard or difficult time of seeing things, especially when it has to do with us, right? So a lot of times we have that ability to see other people's issues and problems and the good and the bads and their strengths and weaknesses really close and up front. But for ourselves, it can be kind of difficult. For ourselves, it can be a challenging experience, to say the least, especially when we're looking for a reason or if we're looking for a fundamental direction. And I think that first off, we have to be able to love ourselves. And so I'm not just talking about love and the factor of loving everybody and everything, but I am. But in order to do that, you have to begin by loving yourself. And honest love, because the way you love yourself directly correlates to how you can love others. Because if you don't really love yourself, you can't really love others, can you? You can think you love others, you can care about others, but in the end, isn't it only predicated on the fact of how much you love yourself? Because that is love. And even if you don't realize it, the way you project love on other people is how you project it on yourself. Stay tuned when we return. I'm going to be telling you and talking about the next life's necessity, the one that most people overthink on a daily basis and feel lost for most of their life because they haven't figured out this necessity, which is so important to the grand scheme of things. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about life's necessities and our desires and how we have a tendency of misconstruing our necessities with our desires and how those desires will later on hold us back, how they can actually hold us back. So let's begin again talking about our necessities. We talked about life, life's breath. We talked about food. We talked about water. We talked about the need for shelter, our need to give and receive love. But the sixth necessity that I think a lot of people miss out on and a lot of people overthink and a lot of people feel lost and they feel beaten down and they don't understand where to turn because they haven't figured out this particular necessity. This necessity is titled purpose. Purpose, individual purpose, is one of life's great necessities. And the reason for that is that purpose is so important because it gives us a reason for living. But it takes our reason to the next level and pushes our abilities to confirm and to reconfirm who we are. And I think that that is amazingly important when it comes to understanding ourselves, understanding the universe, wrapping our arms around other people, accepting who they are, and jumping to that next cause and jumping to that next level because we love it. And purpose is an interesting thing because there can be a joint purpose where we come together and work as a team for certain specific things, but there is also individual purpose, which we were defined inherently to do on our own. And as we think of the hierarchy of needs here, we begin with life, and we begin with life's breath, aka our health level, first and foremost, because think about it, if you're not healthy, you can't even begin to find purpose. You can't begin to think about your purpose unless you're at that next level and you go, okay, I'm going to walk over these coals, I'm going to walk through these gates, I'm going to do what I have to do. And in the process of being ill, I'm going to find my purpose. Or in the process of being ill, I'm going to carry through and carry on with my purpose. It's not going to hold me back. But a lot of times that's hard to do. When you're fighting for your life, the idea of thinking about purpose might not be on the forefront of your mind. The same applies for water. If you need water and there's no water to be found, and you have to go find water, that's going to be your first and foremost responsibility, and that's going to be your priority. And until you find that water, because that water, looking for that water, has become your purpose, right? And so the greater scheme purpose isn't there. So when you have health issues, your purpose is to get better. Your purpose is to overcome the health issues. Your purpose is to get well. Your purpose is to live a life. Your purpose is to live. If you have no food, your purpose is to find food. If you have no water, your purpose is to find water. If you have no shelter, your purpose is to find shelter. If you have no love, your purpose is to find love. And I know that this might sound, well, okay, Ashley, but then you're like, wait a second, I get it, because this puts into perspective another layer of our life, because now we're able to understand better where people are coming from. Because if you can understand this, you can understand why people do what they do. Because depending on where they are in life, depends on their purpose and depends on what they consider the most important life necessity. Now let's look at the spinoff here of life's necessity. So you have health and you have life's breath, right? The spinoff here on that level, taking it to the next extreme. And I agree with certain things. I agree that you're allowed to feel better about yourself. I agree that you should be able to look as youthful as you want. But I think that some people take that to the next extreme, where they have quality of life and they are alive and they're healthy, but they go in for so many just surgeries to make themselves more beautiful. And I think that sometimes it's okay, but I think, again, you can get addicted. You can get addicted to that. You can get addicted to the desire to be perfect. And that desire to be perfect can transform your need into an addiction, and an addiction of elective surgeries. And so that's one hierarchy of how desire, okay, how our desires and misconstruing desires and necessities, and how that can hold us back. Because think about it, if I look at myself and say, well, if I look just this way, if my nose was just smaller, you know, if I didn't have any fat around my stomach, but if I kept doing that over and over again and nitpicking on every single thing and going in for surgeries on every single thing, I would miss out on what the necessities of life were, and I would be dealing with a desire component that's going to be costing me a lot of money and is going to be holding me down. And there's a potential of me losing my life every time I continue to go that direction. You know, the second part is the food. So you got food, and yes, food is necessary to live. Food is necessary to fuel the body. But the desire, and to take it to that next level, to take it to that next level of the wants that we want. And I think sometimes this is because of what we've been taught, what we're supposed to want. So instead of the necessary food that we need to fuel our body, we think of, you know, lamb chops and, you know, filet mignons topped with béarnaise sauce and hollandaise sauce and truffle oil, and it keeps on going. What about for the water? Water is a necessity, but our desire is to have wine. Our desire is for alcohol, for liquor, for vodka, for tequila, for Coca-Colas, for Pepsis. And so again, we've taken what is a necessity, switched it over to a want / desire. And it's interesting how when we change that up, that desire, if you read between the lines, ultimately holds us down. It ultimately holds us down. And a great example of how a desire ultimately holds you down is the concept of shelter. Shelter is the greatest example I can think of when it comes to a necessity that begins with a necessity that turns into a desire and a want that becomes something else. And let me explain. So, you know, and I'm not saying that you can't have a huge house, but I'm saying let's say that there's you and your husband live together, you and your wife live together, you and your spouse, whatever, live together. And it's just the two of you. And the two of you have a two bedroom. Great. Now, do the two of you need, though, 12,000 square feet? So let's just say that out of want and desire, the need for shelter becomes a 10,000 square foot mansion. So you have this 10,000 square foot mansion, and for the most part, some people can go out there and pay cash for whatever, but some of us have to finance, we have to get mortgages, we have to do payments, we have to pay all the bills, all the electricity, all that stuff comes with it too. And then you're paying the mortgage, and then you make a mortgage for 15 or 30 years or whatever you make it for. And if you think about it, that need for shelter turned in to something that's holding us down. It turns into a ball and chain. Why does it do that? Because we're caught to that. We're stuck to that. We look at that house and we know we have to make the payments. We have to take care of all this stuff. And that comes along with it. I don't consider transportation one of the necessary needs. However, I would say that it would be in the top 10. And so if you think about it in that direction, yes, if you need a car to go to and from work, if you need a car to go here and there, that's one thing. But going from that to a Maserati, that changes things. And I understand that people can have nice things. I'm not talking down on that. I'm not saying, oh, you can't have nice things. That doesn't make you a good person. I'm just saying that sometimes our desires and what we think we need can turn around and hold us down, because it's easier to go on a vacation. It's easier to go out of town and to spend the money or to think about maybe seeing another part of the world or doing something new when you don't have so many things tying you down. I mean, half of us don't even think about going over and seeing other things because we have the house payment, the mortgage, the car payment, the other car payment, this payment, that payment, this payment, this payment, that payment, that payment, this payment, that payment, the private schools for the kids. And it gets overwhelming because you're over there making payments all the time on everything. And it never ends. It feels like, you know, right when you make the money goes back out. You don't have money to go take a vacation for 2 months somewhere. My God, people take vacations for that long? And I think a lot of times when we're dealing with our necessities versus our wants and desire, or what we're told that we want, or what we're told that we should desire, we get confused. And those things that we felt define us or give us our life end up holding us down. When we return, I'm going to be talking more about how the necessary things that were necessary in the beginning that turned to these luxury, these riches, how they hold us down, and how we can begin to see the light, and how we can begin to be and have more freedom away from our things that we own, or the things that actually own us. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in two shakes.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and
sound. Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we talked about life's necessities, what they are, what they mean to us, but better yet, how to determine when we take a necessity and turn it into a desire or a want and end up being held down by these desires and wants. For example, when I was talking about the home, we all need shelter. It's one of the top necessities we need to be healthy, to be happy, and to be able to move to the next concept of love and purpose. But we can get carried away by our shelter. We can get carried away by the level of shelter we need. And that's important to identify, because when we get carried away with the purchases that we make because we think we need them, we end up losing our freedom to a degree. When was the last time you saw somebody with a lot of stuff be really free? And I've been thinking about this lately because I have a tendency of keeping things. I have a tendency of keeping a lot of things. And the reason for that is, and I'm not a hoarder. I mean, but I keep stuff. But I have a reason for that. When I was younger, I went through a purging process. And, you know, it was neither here nor there. And I threw away a lot of stuff, and I threw away a lot of my memories, everything from yearbooks to all kinds of stuff. And I look back at that and I go, gosh, I wish I wouldn't have done that. And I think ever since then, I've kind of gotten the mode of keeping things. And I'm going to start working on that in the next few weeks and really honestly observe when I'm doing that. And I think that's one of the things that you can begin to do right now, to identify the difference between the necessary life things that we need versus these wants and desires. And the first concept I'd like to talk about in order to allow to get more freedom in your life, to be able to see more of life, to be able to move past these things that we've bought that are holding us down, is to identify when we're actually buying out of desire or to define ourselves. So the next time you're out at the mall, or the next time you're out looking for whatever, realize and with clarity, why in reality are you wanting to buy this? Is it out of necessity? Is it out of necessity or is it a desire? And a good example of that is, does it really matter? I mean, there are certain things that I've bought in the past that I cannot believe that I bought. What a waste of money. But at the time, I think I was needing it as an identity. I think I was having an identity crisis, and I think I was falling for all the media and all the magazines that were telling me what I need to have. And I think once we're able to identify why we're buying something, we're able to make the right choice. Because why we're buying it is so utterly important. The second thing that we can do is to recognize the amount of stuff that we honestly have. Okay? How many storage facilities do you have? 1, 2, 3. I know some of y'all have a lot, okay? I know some of y'all are carrying a lot of stuff. And, you know, it's like you have to sit there and think about it. And I'm thinking about it myself, too, because I have a storage facility and I have a lot of stuff in that storage facility. I'm thinking, what in that storage facility do I need? What in that storage facility do I need right now? Okay. And we have to put that in perspective, because if there's certain things that you want and you want to keep, that's one thing. But I think a lot of times we keep things because things seem to identify with us. We seem to identify with things. And we seem to recognize ourselves by the things that we have. And I think we have to start honestly taking an assessment of the amount of stuff that we have. Because if we have a lot of stuff, why do we have to keep buying more stuff? I mean, is the stuff going to define us? Is the stuff going to be okay? What's going to happen? And it's kind of like, you know, dealing with the technology scenario. If technology didn't keep going obsolete, I would definitely not buy a new phone. But it seems like every 2 years, you got to make a trade up. Or you're in the dark ages. And it's like funny how some of that stuff can just pile up, and you're sitting at the house and you look and you realize you have 4 old iPhones sitting there. And you go, my God, I paid X amount of money for these things, and they're just sitting in a drawer. They're just sitting there. And a lot of times we have a lot of these things that kind of define us, but it's just like taking up space. It's taking up the room in our own minds. And sometimes that can get in our way of living a true life. Because we might not see the forest through the trees because we're too busy seeing all the products and things that we need, that we think we need to take our life to that next level. I think the next step in recognizing this difference and bettering yourself is to begin to make a plan to downsize. And why I talk about downsizing tonight is because I feel like a lot of us are held down by the things that we own. I feel like all the car payments and all the mortgages and all the payments hold us down because we can't think about a bigger picture in life because we're too busy paying off all the debt that we owe. We're too busy figuring out what we're going to do. We're too busy dealing with all that debt to understand what to do next. And I think that this is so important because we have to have this plan to downsize, because if we have a plan to downsize, we have a plan to figure out what we need to do next. What is important? What can we do? What's the next step? And better yet, where can we go from here? And once we are able to downsize and get that plan, I think that sky's not the limit, but there is no limit. I mean, you could go and see the world. You can be a part of a lot of big things that you wouldn't be able to do with having all this stuff wrapped around you. You know, it's like that ball and chain. It's like every time you get a new car payment, every time you upgrade to a bigger home and you have a bigger mortgage payment, you know, homeowners dues, whatever it is that you have, that's another issue that you have to take care of, that you can't just run off and slack on your responsibilities to make money to pay for these bills. You got to take care of that. And I think a lot of us feel like we're missing the best years of our lives because that's all we're doing. That's all we're doing is making these payments so we can live in this big house. But is that big house really defining us? So we can have that really expensive car. But is that real expensive car helping us, or do we feel like it defines us? And I think these are the things that we have to think about in life, because when we're able to kind of step back and say, you know what, as a woman for me, you know, makeup doesn't define me. And recently I've been doing 2 days at work, Monday through Friday, I've been doing Mondays and Wednesday makeup free. And I've been able to embrace myself better. I've been able to love myself better. I've been able to understand who I am better. I've been able to sit there and say, man, I really respect myself. And I've had coworkers come to me and say, Ashley, wow, you look great. And I'll be like, I'm not wearing any makeup. They're like, man, that's amazing. But the concept is I would have never done that years ago. I would have never done that years ago because I would have been scared to leave the house because I wasn't in my makeup. It didn't have the lipstick perfect. Outfit wasn't great. Da, da, da. And now it doesn't bother me because you know what? This is me. And the best thing is you don't need all the bells and whistles. You don't need all the cover-up. You don't need all the makeup. You can be you. And I think a lot of times the house and the cars and all this stuff ends up taking away from who we truly are. It takes away from who we are, what we want out of life, and maybe looking at the grander scheme of things, because I think the reason why we don't go and look at life and see life in different places in certain ways is because we're too scared because we got too much responsibility wrapped up right now. We got too many things we have to take care of. We have too many loose ends. We have too many financial responsibilities, and we worried all the time about where the money's going to come from next and what we have to do next. And I think that that becomes essentially a necessity. So all of a sudden, these luxuries that we have created, these luxuries that we have bought, have actually caused us to have another necessity, which is to pay for these luxuries. And I think that the payment of these luxuries get in the way of us actually loving life and experiencing life on a wider level. And I think these responsibilities are what keep us stuck down to living in one place our whole life and never experiencing more and wondering later on, do we miss out on life? And I don't want to miss out. I don't want to miss out on life. I want to see things. I want to engage with things. I want to have experiences. And I feel like the more and more of these luxuries that we buy, the more responsibility it creates, the more it cuts into our necessity, the more it actually cuts into our bottom line of loving life, of being one with it, of experiencing it. And it's like we become like this person that just has to make the money to pay the bills to do this. But are we really experiencing life and are we really loving it? Or are we just going through the motions? And I think we have to analyze this tonight and really think about it. Sit down with your family tonight and discuss this with them and see how they feel. Because I bet that they have their own thoughts on things too, because you're not the only one thinking deeply about this. I mean, it goes in and out of your mind, and sometimes we ignore it because the responsibilities are too great. We can't sit there and say, yeah, I want to move for a year abroad and do this and work and make some money. But at the same point in time, you can't do that because you got all these responsibilities at home. You got all these luxuries you got to pay for, but are they really luxuries now or are they just holding you down? Are they really luxuries or are they actually becoming a problem in your life that you got to take care of because you're overspent? You're over there, you're heightened, you have all this debt and you're trying to take care of this and it stresses you out. And that goes back to the health concept. If we're too stressed out about financial stuff all the time, our health's going to suffer, isn't it? We might not eat properly anymore. We might be drinking more alcohol. Something's going to happen. And we have to think about that kind of stuff. And we don't want things to get in the way of our general happiness. And at the same point, we want to be able to experience life and not be held down. Similar to how we confuse life's necessities with these luxuries that end up holding us down is the same as moderation with our vices. We have a tendency of humans to want to have a vice because we feel like it frees us or it liberates us, but in reality, it holds us down. I'll be talking about alcohol, pharmaceutical drugs, sex, and cigarette smoking, and how when we take this out of moderation, it takes a hold of us and holds us down. Remember, always more answers, less questions on Perspectives. And Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in three short shakes.
You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, in the first hour, we were talking about the concepts of life's necessities and how a lot of times we get the necessities confused with our desires and our wants and how those wants and desires can ultimately do hold us back. You know, now I want to talk about something that I think is interesting. It goes on the same lines of thought process, and it's talking about how we have a tendency as human beings of picking a specific vice that we feel kind of gives us freedom, happiness, makes us free, makes us feel liberated. But does it really make us free? Or again, are we being held back by the things that we desire? And in the recent story about the Ashley Madison website hack, we see a lot of people getting very scared that some of their information might come out. And I think it's interesting when we look at this situation in life that a lot of us are doing things, or we know friends, or we might be thinking about doing things that might not lead to our greater good, but it could be our vice. And in that sense, it seems like there's a lot of these vices that we feel might be freeing or might be liberating, but are they freeing? And when it comes to the headlines like this one, there could be millions and millions of people that can be outed for some of the things that they've done. Their whole life can change. Their whole family dynamic can change. They might not still be married after this. With all that sitting there, when we do things that hold us back, what are we thinking about? Do we think that this is a good thing when we eat or drink or do things that are our vices? And I want to specifically talk tonight about alcohol, about pharmaceutical drugs, about sex, and about smoking. And I think that these four things are things that a lot of people are partaking in because they're looking to be liberated, to be free, to have this ability to do whatever you want to do, and to feel young again, or to feel alive again, or whatever it is. But in reality, is this something that is actually a freeing prospect, or is it something that honestly holds us back? And I want to begin tonight with talking about alcohol. And I think that alcohol is one of those interesting concepts because a lot of us like to drink. And we like to drink because I think a lot of times we feel that it gets us closer to the people around us and it gives us something to do. And I think that sometimes we can go out to a social event and when we're trying not to drink or we're feeling like we shouldn't have a drink, when everybody else is drinking, we kind of feel like we should have a drink. We feel almost like out of the sorts, out of the group. We feel like we're kind of looking in from the outside when we're not drinking. And I think one of the funniest things about not drinking is being around a bunch of people who are drunk. I mean, that is the biggest turnoff. When you are the designated driver or you're not drinking and everybody's had way too many drinks, you can wonder why you're even there. And I think it's an interesting deal because it's like this party favor where if you're not kind of in the inner circle, the jokes and the funniness isn't really that funny. But is the alcohol really helping us or is it not? And I think it's interesting too because when I've drunk a lot in the past, you can't have fun, but at the same time, you feel awful the next day. Even in the process of drinking, it's like I feel like we have a tendency of missing out on things. And I'm not saying that you can't have a glass of wine or you can't have a drink or two. I'm just saying that when we look at it from the position of we have to have it to have fun, it gets in the way of having fun. I mean, haven't you gone to a wedding or a party before where you're standing at the bar waiting for a drink and it's like the bartender can't get there fast enough. Like nobody can get there fast enough. And you're just like, I just need a drink. I've had a long work week. I've had a long day. Things haven't been going my way at work. It's been very intense. All the board's after you and you have nothing to show for it. Sales are down. Don't know what to do. And you're over there like, I just got to have a drink. And the bartender comes over there and you literally order a drink and it takes them forever, forever to make a drink that has two ingredients and some ice. And right when you get it, you don't even enjoy it. You just suck it down. You don't even enjoy it. You suck it down because you know what? You felt like you had to have that drink to chill out. And if you look back at that situation, did you really need that drink to chill out? Or was that all psychosomatic in the fact that you believed you needed it, but you really just didn't need it? And I've been there more times than I can count where I believe that I needed a drink so bad. And once you get it, you're kind of like, what was I racing for? It was like a mental agility course. Like you got there and then you had to run to the bar and then you had to like trip somebody to get to the front. And then you finally get the drink and you're like, oh my God, if they would just hurry up for the love of humanity. And you get the drink and then you kind of feel like, man, I'm missing out on the whole night. You know, drinking to me is an interesting thing because it's kind of a crutch. I don't know if it's kind of a crutch or if it just is a crutch. Because does you sometimes are around people where you feel that there's like this big shell around them. And it's like they tell themselves that they can't be forthright or they can't be human until they have a few drinks. And then eventually that shell kind of starts, you know, chopping away at that shell. It starts breaking, but it takes time. And it's like, why does it take that much time to get next to somebody? And I know we've all feel like we've been hurt before, but really, isn't alcohol a crutch in that scenario? Can't we all be honest without the need of alcohol? And I think it's interesting because anytime that I feel like I need alcohol, I feel like it actually holds me back. Like, sometimes drinking can help you be less maybe anxiety-ridden, deal with the stresses of the day, but I hate when I put on the fact that I need to have that to deal with the stressors of the day. Think about it. What if you never went to get that drink? Would you die? I think we put a lot of power in it. And I think that's what I'm getting at right now, is that we put a lot of power into the ability that alcohol has. We put a lot of power into it, saving the day, making everything better. But does it really make everything better? Or is it all in our head? And I think sometimes we don't go to events and sometimes we don't make meetings because they don't have any alcohol. Or we feel like we need to have a drink before we can talk. We feel like we need to be more open, and in order to be more open, we have to have more alcohol. And in order to perform better, we have to have alcohol. And I'll tell you a true story. The first time I ever did a radio show, you know, I had researched some of the greats, and most of the greats, to some degree, have been known to drink on air. And I was like, huh, I wonder if they know the secret. And I think it might have not been the first time I was on air. It probably was like the fifth or sixth time I tried it. And it didn't help me out. It didn't make me more clear-headed. It didn't make me faster. And I think in my head it might have done something. But then I started realizing why a lot of performers get addicted to alcohol and drugs. Because somewhere in their mind, they don't feel like they're good enough to carry it out sober. And I know that we all have friends, and everybody listening tonight has all had friends where you love them very much, but at the same point in time, they're being held back by alcohol. And in the beginning of the night, they can be a lot of fun. They can be the life and the laugh of the party, and everybody just loves them. But toward the end of the night, they're a total mess. And you find yourself making excuses for them. Or other people you find start making judgment calls about them. And it's interesting, if you think back in the days of Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and that whole group of people who made drinking an art form. They drank on TV, for Christ's sakes. They smoked and they drank. But I think even back then, you were the life of the party until you went too far. And then you were kind of pushed back to the back and kind of looked at in not such good light. And I think it's a double standard. And I agree with anybody that's listening tonight saying, well, you know what? They love me when I drink, but then when I have too much, they want to banish me. Where is the right medium? How much is too much? How much isn't enough? And I think when we try to go into that prospect, we have a tendency of losing ourselves. Because why should alcohol make us better? Why should we feel better about ourselves with alcohol? But that's trained. That's a trained response. Years and years of training have gotten to that point where we feel like we have to have the alcohol to make us the life of the party, to be cool, for people to love us, for people to connect with us, for people to be like, man, she's really cool. And it takes a lot of gumption and a lot of wherewithal and a lot of building up of our internal selves to go to that point where we go, you know what? I'm going to go to this event and I'm not going to drink. Or I'm going to go to this event and I'm going to have one drink and I'm going to slowly drink that drink And I'm still going to be just as good as I was, or better, without all the alcohol. Because I think alcohol is a double-edged sword. It can work for a little while to take off that edge, but you can turn around and wonder how drunk you are. Stay tuned when we return. We're talking more about that pharmaceutical drug vice. And I'm not saying that every drug is a bad drug, but I'm saying when we use it to excess or we define ourselves by it, this vice is now taking over our life. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. We've been talking about life's necessities earlier in the hour one. We were talking about how a lot of times our desires and wants get in the way of really recognizing what necessities are. And when that happens, we get tied down by these desires and these wants and these lavish things. And it makes it harder for us to move around, to do what we want, because we're held down financially. We're held down with all these responsibilities, and it goes from having a house where we're comfortable to a huge mansion. And the same applies to dealing with our fantasies, to feeling like we're free and not held down, and to things that liberate us. And a lot of times we take those things too far as well. And when we take these things too far, we call them vices. Some people call them addictions. I like to call them vices. And either way, it goes from taking something in moderation to having it rule you in a way that's unhealthy. You know, when we deal with the situation, we understand that there's only like four or five things that we can talk about. And I only want to like specify four things tonight. I want to talk about alcohol. I want to talk about pharmaceutical drugs. I want to talk about sex. And I want to talk about smoking. And all four of these things can be done in moderation, right? All four of these things we can partake in moderation, have a good life, and move on. But sometimes we have a tendency of what? Of overdoing it. We have a tendency of overdoing it and putting ourselves in bad positions and dealing with a lot more stress in our life for something that was supposed to be liberating us. Think about it. If we like to occasionally have a drink, and that occasional drink goes into, I have to have a half a bottle a day. Or even not about the amount, that occasional drink goes into, in order for me to relax. And you might only have two drinks a night. But in order to actually relax, I gotta have a drink. I can't relax without a drink. I can't relax. I gotta have a drink. I gotta have a drink right now. Oh my God. If I don't have a drink right now, okay? And how many of us have gone to events where we literally, instead of talking to people, we find ourselves, even at weddings, standing in line at the bar, waiting for that bartender to look at us and pour us a drink. And then after we drink that first drink, it's like we've changed. We go up to say hi to everybody, but what was such a big deal? Why couldn't we go up to say hi to everybody else before? We couldn't relax without that drink. And I understand being wound up, and I understand having stress, but at the same time, when we can't relax without a drink, we've taken something that we can use in moderation and made it a vice that's holding us down. Much like the idea of necessities and these major desires, where we go from, we have a car that takes us to work, that's a nice car and it's comfortable, to a car that's $150,000 that we're making major payments on, that's holding us down from experiencing life because we can't take a trip because we got to make the car payment every month. And that car payment is as much as a cruise would be, but we got to do it because, you know, the necessity turned into a luxury that's turned into a pain in our butt. And the same thing goes for these things that we can moderate that turn into vices that essentially work to hold us down. You know, the next thing I want to talk about is pharmaceutical drugs, because pharmaceutical drugs are really cool because they have this guise, you know, of, I'm safe, I'm just a pharmaceutical drug. You can go to Walgreens and get me. It's no big deal. It's okay. It's safe. I am legal. Just like alcohol, a lot of us pride ourselves in our vices that are legal and not illegal. My vice is legal. Your vice is illegal. You're a bad person. And how many of us think about those kind of things when we're living life? Oh, well, so-and-so's addicted to drugs. Street drugs, that is. Very illegal. Bad person. But when it comes to pharmaceutical drugs, it's okay. You know, my doctor prescribed it. Helps me with the nerves. It calms my nerves. Or on the flip side, I got ADD and I need to focus, so I need this pharmaceutical speed to let me focus. And pharmaceutical drugs are an interesting thing because sometimes they can help us and sometimes they can hurt us. And a lot of the ways that they can hurt us is when we become addicted to them and they become a vice because we have to have them. I have to have that drug or I'm never going to be okay. If I don't have that drug, I can't think. If I don't have that drug, I can't sit here in this meeting. I'll never remember anything. And oh my God, my brain doesn't work like that anymore. And oh no. Oh my gosh, I ran out of my prescription. I might as well go to bed. Life is rough. And there you are calling the doctor over and over and over again to get that prescription. It's like you feel like you have to have it. And because you feel like you have to have it, guess what? You have to have it. You've created your own conundrum. And that conundrum becomes antithetical to your progress. Because think about it. When you're about to go on a trip and you realize you only have 4 pills left, you got to call the doctor. And you hope that you get them before the weekend because you know what? You're not going to get a prescription filled. It's going to change the whole outlook of the trip, isn't it? And there you are trying to figure out how to get the prescription filled, when to get there, do all this stuff. And that's the barrier of happiness before you can go on your trip. Because guess what? If you don't have that pill, nothing's going to go right. I mean, you need that pill to function. That pill is part of you. And I think that's when we have this vice and this breakdown is that instead of you having the drug and when you use it, you don't, and you can kind of understand where it works and where it doesn't, and you're not overusing it, and there's sometimes you don't use it at all. Instead of that, now it's like you have to have it. And it holds you back. It holds you back because you stop believing in your own ability to take care of matters. Instead, you believe in you when you have the pill. If you don't believe in you and you don't have the pill, that's a bad combination. And I'm going to talk later on in the hour about how that happened to me when I was smoking cigarettes. And it got so bad for a while that I believed that I had to have that cigarette. And I think a lot of people can attest to that. And when you have that pharmaceutical that helps you sleep or it helps you think, that can get in the way of your self-belief. And I'm not saying that every pill should not be taken. And I'm not saying that some pills aren't prescribed correctly, but I'm saying that sometimes we use these pharmaceutical drugs as a crutch that enables us to stop trusting in ourselves to make the right call without the pill. And I've been there before, too, where I was on a prescription that I had to take for ADD, for attention deficit hyper disorder. And I started taking those drugs when I was a child, when I was like 5 and 6 years old. And when I got to about middle school, I stopped taking it, and I stopped taking it in high school. But then when I got to college, I didn't have that kind of system where, you know, mom woke you up in the morning. I didn't have that regimen. I didn't have that school hourly regimen where you go to each class and you show up and mom wakes you up in the morning and you do your homework. And I didn't have that. And because I didn't have that in college, I started having problems. And so I went back on after kind of falling off the dean's list and going through some grade issues, I had to go back on it. And yeah, for the grades it helped, but it kind of messed with me mentally because I felt like without that drug, I couldn't think. Without that drug, I wasn't good enough. And it wasn't until a few years ago, you know, in my well adult years, that I decided to try it without it. And in the very beginning, it was scary. In the very beginning, I felt like I had this brain fog. Like I couldn't just figure it out. Like I couldn't remember things. And it kind of stressed me out because some of the people that were the closest to me would kind of make fun of me. You're losing your memory. Ooh, that's no good. And I would take it to heart and it scared me, but I knew that in order to go to the other side of this, for my brain chemistry to go back to the way it should be, or the way I feel like maybe it could be, minus the drugs. I had to go through the unknown. As they say, if you're going through hell, don't stop and have a picnic. Just keep on walking. So I picked up my picnic supplies. Because I had had a picnic for a while, just having a pity party or just scared or just not knowing what to do. And I said, I'm going to go forward. And no matter what people say, I'm going to keep going forward. And as I keep going forward, I'm going to figure out the truth. And it took about a good 6 months to feel no more brain fog, to feel conscious, to feel good, to feel centered, to feel clarity. And I even had more clarity than I had had before on the drug. And that's when I started getting my self-esteem, my understanding that I can handle this, maybe back for the first time. And there's a lot of kids out there and a lot of adults out there that have been prescribed a drug that they've been on for years, that they don't know life without it. And you may be one of them. And that's why I'm talking about this tonight, because if you are one of them or you know somebody that fits this category, you know how they scramble when they're out of their prescription. You know how they scramble when they don't have their prescription and how scared they feel about making just a simple decision. Think about what that does to the inside feeling and the respect that person has for themselves. It's at an all-time low because without that pill, they're not themselves. And I'm not saying that every single person in the world can get off the medicine that they're on, but I am saying that a lot of you can. You can because you can. You just have to believe it. Because I think a lot of times we take a pill because of one reason or another. Now, whether or not that pill actually does what they claim it does is a different story. However, just the placebo effect of it alone can get you to believe in it. And when we take the pill away, I realize the placebo goes away, but then the belief in ourselves has to come in at some point. And we have to believe that we can take care of ourselves and that we can have clarity and that we can work. And I'm not saying that this works for everybody, but I'm saying there's a good amount of people out there, and you may be one of them, who it's time to, for the first time in your life, believe in yourself and know that you can carry forth and you can move forward and you can move mountains without the need of a pharmaceutical. And not to mention the idea of the side effects. And I'll talk about that when we return, because I want to hit on that before we move into the sex talk. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we've been talking about the vices that we have. When we have something that we could use in moderation that turns into a vice. And just like life's necessities, when we turn that into luxuries that end up holding us down because of our financial commitment, it's a lot of the same as taking something that we could have in moderation and turning it into a vice that actually holds us down and gets in the way of our progress. You know, right before the break, I was talking about pharmaceutical drugs and how pharmaceutical drugs can be helpful in certain situations, but in others, it holds us down. In others, it holds us down because, you know what? We have to have that prescription. We have to have that pill. Without that pill, we're not ourselves. Without that pill, we can't think. We can't learn. We can't reason. I can't do this. I can't sleep without that pill. I'm beside myself without that pill. I have anxiety. I can't go into that board meeting without that pill. Oh, God, we're going to have to cancel everything. I can't do this. And at what point is it no longer really the drug working, except for the mental beatdown that we've created in our own mind? Because it's no longer helping us. It's actually hurting us in a way, because we are so addicted to it, and without it, we don't feel like ourselves. And last but not least, I want to talk about the concept of the side effects. Everybody listening tonight knows that I'm a life coach and a family and therapist. And I'm also taking actually some new clients right now. And I'm doing some very innovative stuff right now in office on location, and I'm doing some neat stuff with Skyping and phone conversations, because you can be anywhere in the world and we can have a coaching session together, and I can help with that, and I can get you to any place you want to be in life, because I can understand and we can focus and we can co-create a beautiful future that you can have. And if you're interested in that, go to AshleyBurgess.com, 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 and check it out, because I think you'll get some information from me on the website. It's a pretty large website, and it has a lot of explanation about what I work with and what I'm good with, because I think it's all about finding the person that you connect with. Checking out my latest book, The 10-Day Challenge, too, is an awesome book. It's my third book, and it's written to help you find success in your life and get rid of that negative stuff that's holding you back. And that's what we're talking about right now, because with the pharmaceutical drugs, I see a lot of clients either on Skype or in my office that have been on a drug for so long that it's causing a lot of side effects. And I've seen a lot of kids come in, and when I mean kids, the ages of 22 to 25, where they were dealing with ADD, attention deficit disorder, and mom and dad sent them to a psychiatrist or a family doctor, and they prescribed Adderall or one of the many stimulant drugs. And the problem with that is that in the beginning it may work, because sometimes medicine helps to recalibrate. But over a period of time, there's only a rare medication that doesn't actually create significant side effects. And I saw a lot of girls between the ages of 22 and 28 that were suffering from anxiety, a bit of depression, some OCD displayed effects, and the inability to get close to people because they were on this drug. And I'm meaning that they were so focused and kind of so stressed out by it that it was causing problems in their love life. It was causing problems for them to meet people. And one of the biggest things that I hear from them is, oh, they're all talking bad about me. I walk into a room and I know they're talking about me. I know they're making fun of me. I can see them looking at me. They're making fun of me. And those people probably weren't speaking about them at all. And that's what says that you start seeing things in a certain light, in a certain negative tone, sometimes when we're on certain pharmaceuticals. And you know what it does? It divides us from other people. It divides us even more than we already feel like we are. And so guess what happens? We go into a situation feeling lesser than. We go into a situation feeling like everybody's making fun of us. We're the butt of all the jokes. And you start eliminating those situations by not going out, by not spending time, by not socializing. So then you spend more time in your head. The more time that you spend in the head, the more time you spend overanalyzing. The more overanalyzing you do, the more that you feel that everybody's after you. That paranoia starts to set in. And when you get that paranoid situation in, it's hard to rattle that out of the brain. You no longer feel certain ways except for anxiety and stress, because you feel like everybody's kind of after you. And I understand you're not alone. There's a lot of women and men who deal with this on a daily basis. And we all feel like that to some degree naturally. But with the help of certain drugs, we can feel like it's almost impossible to want to leave the house. And think about what that does to social situations and what that makes you feel when you meet other people. You feel alone. You feel desperate. You feel like everybody's out to get you. And if you're in that situation right now, or you have a daughter or a son who is dealing with the situation right now, you can help them. And you can help them by shining some light on the fact that it's not all in them. A lot of it is the drug that they're on. You know, I've had clients come in here before where they take Xanax or Valium, and they start having problems at work because they're taking it on the job, and they don't know why their employer is giving them issues. And it's like, well, you're probably not finishing responsibilities because you're not really paying attention. But the point is that why do you feel like you have to take an anti-anxiety pill on the job? And you have to sit there and look at the job itself and say, does this job cause me major anxiety? Am I just anxious in life? But also, does this pill have anything to do with this anxiety? Because sometimes some of the things that we take actually hold us down and cause more side effects than just dealing with the source of the anxiety. The source is what's important because it's not the fast food of medicine anymore. Getting to the source takes time. It takes dedication. It takes self-respect. And it takes the desire and want to figure out more about yourself and less about the get healthy fast way, but not really get healthy and later on have to deal with the side effects and the problems when you get older. And the older you get, the less likely you want to deal with this. The older you get, you don't want to have to be so addicted to a medicine that you actually have to go into a facility for 2 weeks to get off of it to deal with the come down and the side effects. You don't want to have to deal with the weight gain or the weight loss. You don't want to have to deal with all that when you're in your 40s or 50s because it's eventually going to come to pass. We can't put off what we can do today. And I know that sometimes I've done it myself where I just want to put it off because I don't really want to deal with it. But I know in my heart of hearts it's the right thing to do. When I took myself off of that stimulant, it took me a while to get to the point where I did it. And when I did it, it scared me. It scared me because I connected with thinking with that stimulant and me. And I connected ADHD with me and how my thoughts would be not clear if I didn't take the drug. And to a certain degree, I had to teach myself how to have clarity and how to focus on one thing at a time. But in the same approach, I was able to not go into scenarios with anxiety anymore. I no longer made judgment calls when I walked in a room. And I no longer saw people looking at me a certain way and thought that they were looking at me in a mean way. I realized that it was more of an inquisitive state of mind. And once we see it as inquisitive instead of mean or judgmental, it changes everything. But it's hard to do that when you're on something that's coloring a specific picture for you. I think we should talk about smoking right now before we talk about sex, because smoking was a vice that I had. Smoking was a vice that I had, and smoking was something that I dealt with for years. And I remember I smoked for a long time, and everybody said, oh, did you get this voice from smoking? No. When I smoked, my voice was a lot lower. And especially when I had a cold, it sounded really cool. Seriously, it sounded like way better than Phoebe on Friends when she got sick and then like did the guitar and everybody loved her. I loved Phoebe on Friends, but seriously, I sounded truly sexy. Could have gotten a job on some 1-800 number or something like that, doing phone calls that were not based on anything besides sex. Seriously. However, I smoked. And I remember I quit for 7 years. And when I quit for 7 years, I thought it was over, but I couldn't stand being around smokers. Couldn't stand it. I hate it. I used to yell. I'd be at the restaurant and be like, is there a way we can be away from the smokers? I mean, I can't even taste my food. And eventually, after a few years after that, after 7 years of quit, I went into a meeting one day. And I was working on a project with some people that were dealing with going through rehab. And they all smoked because it was getting off of another vice. You know, stop going doing the cocaine or the pharmaceutical drugs. And you go to smoking. And I remember accepting a cigarette at a meeting just because I was like, ah, yeah, I'll have one, because I wanted to connect with everybody. And I had a cigarette, and man, I had to leave that meeting because I was so green. Because I smoked it like I smoked back in the day, and I mean, I was sick to my stomach. I think my face must have looked like white or green. I headed over to the grocery store to find some sort of like ginger remedy. Went to the Whole Foods and found a ginger remedy. That didn't help. I just had to go home and just like, oh God, please help me. Well, like a moron, what do you think I go and do? 2 days later, I have another cigarette. And I had that cigarette and I started smoking again. And I smoked for 3 years straight. And when we return, I'm going to tell you how I quit. So stay tuned. When we return, Perspectives, we back here in two shakes.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and sound.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about the vices that hold you down. When an extracurricular activity gets out of control and becomes a vice. And we talked earlier about alcohol and pharmaceutical drugs, and now we're talking about smoking. And, you know, I started smoking again for 3 years. This was a while back. This was over 4 years ago. And one night, I kind of decided this is the last cigarette I'm going to have. And sure enough, I woke up that morning and I didn't smoke another cigarette. However, there were issues that were about to pass, meaning that the next morning I had to fly out that morning, and the next morning, early in the morning, I had to be on TV on a 5:30 a.m. interview. One, I'm a morning person, but 5:30 in the morning, that's pretty early. And I had to be there at 5, and I had to get up at 4, and I had a time change of 2 hours. Okay? That's like getting up at midnight and sleeping for 3 hours and going on TV, on national TV. So there I am. So I show up, and the makeup artist was talking to me and laughing. She goes, hey, I talked to you on the phone yesterday. I tried to quit, but I started smoking again. I go, no problem. You know, it is what it is. But then it scared me because I always smoke, and I started thinking that smoking allowed me to think. Oh, God. Oh, no. What am I going to do? And I carried through the interview, and it went well, but, I mean, I was Jedi mind-tricking myself the whole time into the fact that, what if I can't think? What if I can't think straight? Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? I don't have a cigarette to think. Oh, this isn't good. And what I'm saying is that it was one thing to have a cigarette here and there, where it's not presupposed on the fact that it helps you think, where it's not predestined on the fact that you have to have a good life based on smoking. Where it's just one random cigarette once a month, that's one thing. But to be addicted to smoking, to have to go and get that pack of cigarettes before you can make a big decision, that's when you know that you've taken something that could be fun and made it into a vice, made it into a tough career that you're not getting paid on. And smoking's a big deal. I've actually seen people get on a flight, no joke, and because we were stuck on the runway for a little while, they literally had to grab their stuff and leave the flight. And they were stuck in another country or wherever because they needed a cigarette so bad, they were going to lose it. And that's when a vice has taken over your life. When you can no longer fly somewhere because you're stuck. Because you got to get off that plane to smoke that cigarette, that's a problem. But in all three of those situations, it's kind of more of a personal battle. It's kind of more of a personal battle dealing with overcoming that vice. The last one is sex. And a lot of times people do get addicted to sex and it becomes a vice. It's no longer something that is in moderation. It's no longer something that is just, you know, between a wife and a husband or a girlfriend or a boyfriend. It becomes more than that. And we've just recently seen the headlines from the Ashley Madison hacking scenario where this database of people who were having extramarital affairs was hacked into. And now people's identities are being revealed. 37 million people. 37 million people are on this site. And it's unbelievable. 37 million people, and they're starting to reveal people's names one at a time. And, you know, it's interesting how that is, because to me, that is when sex has become a vice. When you're looking for it everywhere. When you're going on websites to find it. To me, this becomes an addiction. To me, this gets in the way of living. This gets in the way of living our life in a way where we are not tied down to specific things. And I think that that's how sex addiction comes to play, is that people become addicted to that form of emotion, to that form of activity, similar to drinking and pharmaceuticals and smoking. And the reason for that is that I think you let something get out of hand. And I think that we aren't very honest with ourselves because we see it, and maybe it's because it gives us this power trip, or we feel better about ourselves, or we feel bigger about ourselves, or we feel, I don't know, something more because we're having sex with lots of different people. And I think that we have to sit back and say, why do we not feel like we're good enough? Why does having sex with other people make us feel like we're better, or it gives us more power, or tends to give us more strength? Why? And I think we have to look within ourselves, and I think in all of these occasions, whether it's alcohol or drugs or smoking or sex, we have to figure out, why is it that this object or this thing makes us feel better about ourselves? Because we shouldn't need anything, right? We shouldn't need excess alcohol or drugs or sex or smoking to be on our game, to be ourselves, to be independent. And it seems to me like a lot of this stuff gets in the way of our happiness, because when it comes to alcohol, we can overindulge and we can miss out. We can also get very sick. I mean, you know, you have, you know, psoriasis, you have all kinds of different things that people get when they drink too much alcohol, because their body can't handle it. Your liver can't handle it. Your body can't process it. Pharmaceutical drugs, all the side effects, as well as your body just kind of being beaten down over a period of time, because your liver has to process all these chemicals. What about with the smoking? You have your lungs. What happens to your lungs? What happens to your body? What happens to your skin? And sex. What about that? And different from the other three, if you're married and you have a sex addiction, this not only affects you, but it affects your spouse. And you got to get down to the nitty gritty and figure out, why is it that you feel, or other people feel, like they need to have this, or they need to be on that website, or they need to be finding this. And you might have a friend of yours right now that's confided in you, that they're scared that this might come out. And I've had two friends confide in me this week about it. They're scared because they're married and they're scared that it's going to come out. And I hope for themselves that they can figure out why they even went on that website in the first place, to try to figure out what's missing in their life, to try to figure out what's missing within them, that they feel that that actually gives them what they need. And I think that we have to sit back with all our vices and say, why do we feel lesser than? And if I was to analyze myself and evaluate my situation, I would look at alcohol. And I would say that there's some times in life where the drink does not make the person, and the drink doesn't put everything in perspective, and the drink isn't the only thing that can take the edge off. And I think sometimes when we put this in our way of our happiness, as far as, well, in order to be happy, I need that drink. In order to be happy, I need the sex. In order to be happy, I need that drug. In order to think, I need that cigarette. In order to think, I need that pill. In order to sleep, I need that pill. In order to relax, I need that pill. I need that alcohol. I think we have to get back to ourselves and say, hey, why are we doing this to ourselves? Just much as life's necessities. Why have I put all this on my plate and now I got to deal with this day in and day out? Why can't I just simplify my life and say, you know what? Moderation. I'm not an addiction. I'm not a vice. That vice does not control me. And in order for it to not control me, I have to pull back and analyze honestly in my heart, why is it that this has become an addiction? Why have I used this as a crutch, and why am I defining myself with this? And why, without it, does it scare me? And then in there, and at that point, when you are in that position, you can then sit back and say, you know what? I get it. And it might take a few weeks, it might take a few months, but if you're working on this pattern to become vice-free, your life's going to be that much better. Your life's going to be amazing, because at least you actually understand you. And if you need help doing it, there's people like me and other people in the community and in the world that can help you. Asking for help is not a bad thing. It's smiled upon, because it shows that you are actually going to that next level and you care enough about yourself to know that you might not have all the answers, but you know where you want to go. We have a great show for you next. And remember that on Perspective, there's always more answers and less questions. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in three shakes.